I take the single carriage train along a perfect country branch line in London's commuter land, and join one of the slowest services in the land along the shores of the lovely Dyfi estuary to the far west of Wales. I buy a ticket on the stopping train across the Pennines on a line with so few services that its glorious scenery is a secret known only to the regulars. Here, too, is the Bitton line in Norfolk and the Tarka line in North Devon, as well as the little branch line to the fishing port of Loo in Cornwall, rescued from closure in the 1960s and now celebrating its 150th anniversary, taking families on holiday to the seaside. The journeys range from the most luxurious and historic, aboard the Orient Express, to the most futuristic, on the driverless trains of London's Docklands Light Railway. There have been many books published about the railways with words in their titles such as Glory Days or As It Was, which have a sepia-tinted take on reality. This is not one of them. Rather, these chapters aim to capture the essence of our railway byways in the present-day landscape, especially through the words of the people I encounter on the journey. This is not, however, to overlook the glorious railway heritage that is still here to be enjoyed. Above all, I hope the book conveys the infinite delight of slow travel in a hurried and fretful era. There was always more in the world than men could see, walked they ever so slowly. They will see it no better for going fast, wrote the great Victorian social thinker John Ruskin. The really precious things are thought and sight, not pace. It does a man no harm to go slow, for his glory is not at all in going, but in being. Those modern slow train travellers, Paul Theroux and Michael Palin, put it more pithily. Looking out of a train window, wrote Theroux, is like watching an unedited travelogue without the obnoxious soundtrack. For Palin, the mantra is even simpler. If travelling's worth doing, it's worth doing in a leisurely manner. As I was setting out on my journeys for this book in the early summer of 2010, the case for slow travel received, literally, a gift from the sky, when the ash cloud from an erupting volcano in Iceland grounded flights across Europe. Although many people had their plans disrupted, there were others who returned home thrilled at the rediscovery of the pleasure of leisurely travel on scenic branch lines and byways. The Association of Train Operating Companies reported that traffic on some routes had doubled as air passengers opted to take the train. All this makes it less likely that in our environmentally and socially conscious age there will ever be another beaching. But who knows? One thing is certain. The communities of Britain will remain on their guard. Like the best love affairs, Britain's attachment to her railways defies explanation, and the authorities tinker with it at their peril. The curious but intense pleasure that is given to many by railway trains is both an art and a mystery, wrote the essayist and historian Roger Lloyd. It is an art because the pleasure to be had is exactly proportionate to the enthusiasm one puts into it. It is a mystery because it is impossible to explain to others. Climb aboard with me and experience the joy of the slow train for yourself. Chapter 1. The 1436 from Norwich, on the Crab and Lobster Line to Poppyland by the Sea. Norwich to Sheringham via Wroxham, Worcester, Cromer and West Runton. Once upon a time, the departure board at King's Cross Station, embarkation point for some of the grandest journeys in the land, would resonate with the important-sounding names of famous expresses. The Coronation, the Elizabethan, the Talisman, the Fair Maid, the West Riding Limited, the Tyne Tees Pullman, and most famous of all, the Flying Scotsman. The least of these, a mouse among the big beasts of the main line,